Good evening, and welcome to a one-night stand with the big band. This is Arnold Dean, and tonight on a one-night stand, we'll be visiting the first place in this country devoted to the history, the legend, the legacy of jazz from its origin to the modern era. The New York Jazz Museum, a converted carriage house at 125 West 55th Street in New York City. A one-night stand will be brought to you by WTIC and by Russo Chevrolet, where you'll find a great selection of Vega GTs, the Motor Trend Economy Car of the Year. Our opening selection will be another of those all-star swing bands featuring Gene Krupa's collection, Roy Eldridge on trumpet, Benny Goodman's clarinet, Chu Berry on tenor sax, Jess Stacy, Alan Roos, Israel Crosby. It was recorded in February of 1936, and I think it's the most appropriate opener for the New York Jazz Museum since the title is Swing Is Here. Gene Krupa and his all-stars with Swing Is Here. Say, now that it's spring, do your car a favor and get it in shape for the long driving months ahead. The service department at Russo Chevrolet and Windsor Locks can really help. Tomorrow through next Thursday, May 17th, Russo Chevrolet is featuring an auto clinic for any year, make, or model of car. You see, Russo has become a unique dealer in the area because of their electronic analyzer. Trained Russo mechanics hook up this sensitive device to your car, and at the touch of a button, all systems are checked for wear, defects, and damage. You'll then be given a written appraisal of your car's condition. Are you wondering how much this is going to cost? Well, we told you Russo was unique. This marvelous service is absolutely free. The only thing you have to do is make an appointment at Russo Chevrolet. Russo's mechanics and the new electronic analyzer will do the rest. Remember, the free auto clinic at Russo Chevrolet starts tomorrow and continues 8 to 4:30 p.m. daily for 1 week only. Do your car a big favor, and yourself too, at Russo Chevrolet, across from Bradley International in Windsor Locks. Now the first of our guests for this evening's one-night stand with the big bands, a gentleman named Howard Fisher, a theatrical attorney, founder and president of the New York Hot Jazz Society, and executive director of the Jazz Museum. Howard, I guess this is the appropriate place to start. What prompted you to form this jazz museum?
We had the Hot Jazz Society, Jack Bradley and myself, since 1967 when we presented concerts once a month. And then in 69, we started the newsletter Hot Notes, which is part of our membership program. And we've always had the idea of starting a museum since there is nothing like this in the entire world. And in 1970, we applied for a grant from the New York State Council on the Arts, and we were awarded $17,000 to plan the museum. And this got us really started. Last year, we started looking for a facility, and we came across this magnificent little building. And we are exactly where we want to be right now, except for the necessary funds we need to grow at a more rapid pace than we are.
This is a truly American art form, is it not?
It is the only truly American art form, and people are beginning to recognize it. And our purposes are to expose jazz properly to younger generations and reintroduce it to older generations, and that's what we're doing with our many programs.
Tell us something about the physical displays that you have at the museum.
Well, right now we've just opened the Billie Holiday exhibit. This is our third exhibit. The first one was that opened the museum was on Louis Armstrong. Also, we have a musical instrument exhibit, some rare instruments, and we have a viewing room where we show jazz films on a regular basis daily. And we, of course, have the sales shop at the museum, which sells records, books, photos, posters, magazines, many things you can't get anywhere else. And, of course, we have the jazz information area, which tells you all the events that are occurring in and around the metropolitan New York area and jazz each week and daily, as a matter of fact.
Is there any ethnic breakdown? Is there one ethnic group more than any other that's interested in jazz?
Definitely not. Jazz transcends ethnicity, if that's the correct pronunciation. Jazz is jazz, and everyone gets along because they love the music.
Do the youngsters dig?
Everyone does.
Do you find that these great jazz artists themselves are very interested in what you have?
We have a tremendous response by the artists because in the New York metropolitan area, there are well over 100 of the legendary jazz artists living in this area, and they all participate and are really excited about what we're trying to do, and we try and involve them in so many of our projects. Just to give you an example, during the exhibit on Billie Holiday that's now running and will run through July, we have had numerous musicians who work with Billy come to play for us and appear as our special guests and come by the museum and meet the people that are coming in. For instance, Buck Clayton, who was very close to Billy, and Buddy Tate, who played with her, and Earl Warren and Joe Jones, and all these great people come by the museum. And generally, a lot of the visitors are surprised to come across one of these great musicians in the museum when they come to visit.
You are not a musician.
No, I'm not. I tell people I'm a good listener. And I have represented as an attorney a number of the musicians. I feel that I really know them, and it's very exciting for me to be with such creative people. I just couldn't be happier doing what I'm doing and building something that I think has been needed in this country for so long.
Executive Director Howard Fisher of the New York Jazz Museum. Howard, I think it's most appropriate if we include now the first jazz record ever made. I'm sure you're familiar with it. It was recorded February 26th of 1917 in New York City. The sound obviously very dated. After all, it's 20 years older than the one we just heard by the Gene Krupa All-Stars called Swing Is Here. It featured Nick LaRocca's cornet, Eddie Edwards' trombone, Larry Shields' clarinet, Henry Ragus' piano, Tony's Barbaro, otherwise known, I believe, as Tony Spargo on drums. And this one record sparked a whole new art form that so many of us enjoy and love today, the original Dixieland Jazz Band and the Livery Stable Blues. Thank you. Musical history. The first jazz record ever made in 1917 by the original Dixieland jazz band, Livery Stable Blues. The Jazz Museum first came to my attention when a friend of our Daily Plaza show on WTIC Radio sent a clipping from the Christian Science Monitor of Wednesday, September 6th, 1972. The headline says, Blazing Blues Museum Livens Legacy. Over it, pictures of jazz greats Louis Armstrong, Duke Ellington, Benny Goodman, Wes Montgomery, and Tommy Dorsey. And if I might read just the opening paragraph from the article by Andrea Chambers. Midtown Manhattan is a muted plaid of browns, grays, and sandy beiges, juxtaposed in organized stone and steel blocks. But on West 55th Street, elbowing stone and steel on its left and on its right, is a discordant patch of blazing blue, jazz blue, to be exact. This is the New York Jazz Museum, the first in the U.S. devoted to the history, legend, and legacy of jazz from its African origins to the modern era. One of the sub-headlines is, We're anxious to show people the history and significance of jazz, says managing director. Let's meet the managing director, Jack Bradley, of the New York Jazz Museum. And Jack, can you begin by describing the physical layout of the museum?
Our main floor consists of the recently opened Billie Holiday exhibit. And up here in the balcony, we have the best that we took from our original opening exhibit of Louis Armstrong. And to the rear of the main floor, we have a small theater where we show rare jazz films a couple of times a day.
That's one thing that many of us perhaps didn't know existed, rare jazz films. Like what?
Well, we have stuff going back to 1929. That was the year Sound first came out in movies, and that was the first and only film Bessie Smith ever made called St. Louis Blues. We also have Louis Armstrong's first film he made in 1932, a short called Symphony in Black. Now we're featuring many of Billie Holiday's films. Her first film was made in 1934 when she was only 19 years old, and she did a blues with Duke Ellington's orchestra.
Now we talk about this Billie Holiday display that you have right now. Of course, this is time to coincide with the great popularity of the movie, Lady Sings the Blues. Do you find that there's a great resurgence of interest in her because of the movie?
Oh, there definitely is. It's quite ironic that Diana Ross is helping Billie Holiday have a comeback, really. I'm sure Billie would consider it quite funny. I hate to put down the movie, but I have to point out that it really had very little to do with the real life of Billie Holiday.
How do you go about collecting memorabilia of Billie Holiday?
We approached fellow collectors and musicians from all over the country, photographers, artists. We have original artwork here. We have previously unpublished photographs of Billie. We have her personal jewelry that was given to us by the woman who traveled with her and was her dresser the past 2 years of her life.
The final picture you have, incidentally, is her tombstone. Where's that located?
That's in the Bronx in New York. Interesting thing. It wasn't until quite a few years after her death that people got together and raised money to get a tombstone for her. It's strange how people can be so famous, like King Oliver, who was Louis Armstrong's idol. He's buried in the Bronx. He doesn't have a tombstone. In fact, Louis Armstrong doesn't even have one, and it's almost 2 years since his death.
What about Billie Holiday's records? I know that you play them in the background ordinarily when we're not here recording.
Oh, yeah, she made a wealth of recordings from the early 30s right up until a few months before her death in 1959. And thank God we have that great legacy to look back on. And Billie will always be alive through her great recordings. The side she made with the 30s remain jazz classics to this day. The small groups that Teddy Wilson got together had all of the top musicians of the 30s. Whenever Billy wanted to do a record date, Teddy would just call up the various musicians who happened to be in town. If Benny Goodman's band was in town, he'd draw from that, or Duke Ellington's band, or Basie's band. So it was not only Billy that made the recordings great, but the other instrumentalists as well.
Jack, let's listen to one of those recordings from the 30s with Jonah Jones, Johnny Hodges, Harry Carney, Teddy Wilson, Billie Holiday, and These Foolish Things.
What set her apart from everybody else?
Well, she had a style that was completely original, although she always admitted that she came directly from Bessie Smith and Louis Armstrong, and it is very obvious to me that's where she drew from. But although she drew from these two greats, she had her own thing. She used her voice like an instrument and improvised just as freely as Lester Young or Louis Armstrong. It was pure and open and unaffected, and it was Billie Holiday.
Downstairs, you also have a collection of some old instruments.
Yes, going back even to 1885, we have a rotary valve trumpet, which was a forerunner of what was to come later. I have a Selma trumpet, designed especially for Louis Armstrong in 1934 in France, which is called a balanced action. Louis liked this design as the valves were further forward away from the mouthpiece, and because he felt it was a better balanced horn. We also have a cornet owned and played by Bobby Hackett, pocket or piccolo trumpet, which is a very small edition of a full-size horn, which was owned by Hot Lips Page, one of the great trumpet players who passed away in the early 50s. We have a guitar, Gibson four-string guitar, which was owned and played by Eddie Condon in the late 30s. It's quite rare because most guitars, as you know, are six-string. However, Eddie Condon started off on banjo, and when banjos went out, guitars came in. Rather than learn the other two strings, he just had a special guitar designed for him.
He never did play a solo, did he?
He's played a couple of four-bar breaks. I think that's as close as it came. One of his greatest things was organizing bands and musicians and getting great groups together all through the years from when he started off in Chicago. And he's always had an eye and an ear for the best musicians and getting them together in what is supposed to be informal jam sessions, but which really he did quite a bit to organizing the music and directing it.
You're listening to Jack Bradley, the managing director of the New York Jazz Museum, and I think it's about time for more music on the One Night Stand, Jack. Let's listen to some of Eddie Condon before he switched over to that four-string guitar, when he was still playing banjo as part of the old Chicago gang. This is another oldie. It was recorded in 1927 with a group called McKenzie and Condon's Orchestra. Jimmy McPartland on cornet, Frank Teschmacher clarinet, Bud Freeman tenor, Joe Sullivan piano, Eddie Condon banjo, Jim Lanigan on tuba, Gene Krupa on drums, and Nobody's Sweetheart. Nobody's Sweetheart, done by the Eddie Condon McKenzie Orchestra, the Chicagoans. Nobody's Sweetheart of 1927, presented on a one-night stand with the big bands, tonight featuring the New York Jazz Museum. We hope you're enjoying the tour, and it will continue in just a minute on WTIC in Hartford as a one-night stand with the big bands with your host Arnold Dean is again being brought to you by WTIC and by Russo Chevrolet of Windsor Locks. Get into the swing of things this summer with a sporty new Vega GT from Russo Chevrolet. The GT option on the Vega hatchback coupe or the camback is a power package of luxury sports accessories for someone who wants a higher performance car. The Vega GT has become such a smashing success that Motor Trend magazine has named it Economy Car of the Year. Visit Russo Chevrolet soon and find out why. A Russo salesman will be glad to show you the fine features of the Vega GT. Besides a more powerful engine, the GT package includes bias-belted ply tires, special instrumentation, sport steering wheel, adjustable driver's seat back, wood-grained accents, and many other smart accessories. See a whole line of Vega GTs at Russo Chevrolet soon. They're right across from Bradley International in Windsor Locks. Find out for yourself how the Vega GT has become more than just an economy car, but the economy car of the year by Chevrolet. Now let's get back to our tour of the New York Jazz Museum as we continue our conversation with Managing Director Jack Bradley. When you collect the memorabilia that's on display here, how do you go about it, Jack? Now, for example, Artie Shaw's clarinet. Now, he doesn't play anymore. He's a member of your board of directors.
Yeah. In fact, Artie mentioned that he was going to give it to us. We're still waiting on that, Artie, in case you're listening. Because something like that should be in here, and obviously Artie is not going to play again. In fact, he really doesn't like much to talk about music or the past.
Well, let's listen to some of that great Artie Shaw music from the past. This is the one that started it all for his band in 1938. Begin the Begin.
Thank you.
It's interesting. We do have an Artie Shaw movie from 1939 here, and it has about 20-year-old Buddy Rich featured on the drums, yeah. And it's really amazing to see Buddy at that age. And
Artie Shaw with a full head of hair.
Almost full head of hair, yes.
Well, that was just, about a year after he had really made it big with Begin the Begin. That was quite a band he had. That's one film I'm going to look forward to seeing because I sort of idolized that band. I know that your idol was Louis Armstrong.
That's right. Always. In fact, he's been a god to me, and he still is. And to me, he is the basis of all jazz. Everything came from him. All of American music really was strongly influenced by him, and every great musician will always acknowledge their debt to Louis Armstrong.
Tell us about some of the specific things you have on display here in the balcony.
The photos trace his career from the early days when he first joined King Oliver's band in Chicago in 1923, and they come right up to contemporary times. It shows him with all sorts of people, from Harpo Marx to Leonard Bernstein. Shows him with his old teacher in New Orleans, Peter Davis, with W.C. Handy, with George Avakian, the Columbia producer who made many of Louis' great sides. We have clips from the films. We have Louis in Africa. It shows the international appeal of this man. He was loved and admired the whole world over. In fact, a poll was taken one time in Europe about the most famous man in the world, and Louis came out the winner, above presidents and kings and queens, and it's really not surprising. I want to point out on the wall over here, we have some of Louis' compositions. He composed many songs, which many people don't know. One of his first, when he was still a teenager in New Orleans, was I Wish I Could Shimmy Like My Sister Kate, which he sold to another musician named Piron for $50. And naturally, Louis' name was never on it since. And in fact, Louis refused to ever play that tune, since he was silly enough to sell it for that money. He certainly wasn't going to help push it. Probably one of his most famous is Strutting with Some Barbecue. Thank you. interesting thing with some of his laundry slips over here, which state, like in his own handwriting, one pajama set, three white shirts, five sport shirts, six shorts, seven pairs of socks, and 90 hankies. Actually, that's probably the amount of hankies that Louis Armstrong used up in an average day, at least when he did a performance.
And he was serious about that list?
Oh, well, this is the handkerchiefs he used out. This is actual laundry slips. This says 26 hankies, 45 hankies, 38. These are his daily laundry slips, and that's how many handkerchiefs he would have to send out to the laundry every day. Over here, we have some letters that came, fan mail from all over the world, and to show how famous and well-known he was, the letter would just be addressed to old Satchmo himself, wherever he is. That was all it said on the envelope, and believe it or not, it got to him.
Did you know him well?
Yes, we were quite close friends, and I'm very flattered to have been so close to him, and for him to have accepted me and had me out to his house many, many times, and I traveled with him, and as much as I loved him, I feel he really shared the same respect for me, and I learned so much from this man, not only as a musician, but as a person, Louis Armstrong. Was one of the most unaffected, natural, beautiful people in the world, thoughtful, kind. Like all geniuses, he had his faults and was a little eccentric at times. But I really can't say enough good things about him. I have a little anecdote to show you the simplicity of the man. And I mean simplicity in the best sense of the word. I was on the road with him once. We were up in Framingham, Massachusetts. And after the gig, it was around 2 or 3 in the morning, we were in his motel room, which had a little kitchenette, and he was exclaiming about how well off he was now and recounting his early days in New Orleans when he used to have to drive a coal cart driven by a mule, and to point out how well off he was, he brought me to his refrigerator and opened the door and said, "See, I have a dozen eggs in here, and anytime I'm hungry, I can eat." And he didn't realize that he should have filet mignons 10 times a day if he wanted. He was just happy to have his dozen eggs.
Was there any particular record that he enjoyed listening to more than others with a perfectionist like himself? Did he ever have a solo, just as an example, that he thought was as close to perfect as he had ever come?
No, he's never mentioned that. Most all his solos, especially in the earlier days, were very, very close to perfection. Most of them have not even been closely matched. When asked what his favorite tune was, he always named Sleepy Time Down South because that was his theme song from the early 30s.
Folks are crooning South in love. You didn't tell me, boy, because I know, yes. When it's sleepy time down south, yes, the south wind blowing, then the pine wood trees. Now folks down there live a life. When old mammy falls on her knees, yes. When it's sleepy time runs out, yes. Steamboats up the river coming and going. Yeah, that does this. Splashing the night away. Papa, as warriors. You hear those banjos ringing, and the folks are singing, and they dance till the break of day. Yes, dear old Southland, with this dreamy song, you take me back where I belong, right in my mammy's arms. Bantes, bantes, bantos, bantos, bantes, bantos, 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 bantos,
Louis originally did that in the early 30s, around 1931. This is a recording done in a live performance about 25 years later, Sleepy Time Down South. In a moment, we'll meet Clark Terry. Say, now that it's spring, do your car a favor and get it into shape for the long driving months ahead. The service department at Russo Chevrolet in Windsor Locks can really help. Tomorrow through next Thursday, May 17th, Russo Chevrolet is featuring an auto clinic for any year, make, or model of car. You see, Russo has become a unique dealer in the area because of their new electronic analyzer. Trained Russo mechanics hook up this sensitive device to your car, and at the touch of a button, all systems are checked for wear, defects, and damage. You'll then be given a written appraisal of your car's condition. Are you wondering how much this is going to cost? We told you Russo was unique. This marvelous service is absolutely free. The only thing you have to do is make an appointment at Russo Chevrolet. Russo's mechanics and the new electronic analyzer will do the rest. Remember, the free auto clinic at Russo Chevrolet starts tomorrow and continues 8 to 4:30 p.m. daily for 1 week only. Do your car a big favor, and yourself too, at Russo Chevrolet, across from Bradley International in Windsor Locks. One of the great jazz artists of this generation is Clark Terry. And Clark, I know that your schedule is an extremely demanding one. What about the New York Jazz Museum? I take it you've been there.
You know what? I haven't had an opportunity to get there yet.
Is that a fact?
I certainly haven't, man. You wouldn't believe it, but I come home and I'm home for a day or two, and I have a pile of mail that's 10 feet high that I have to try to wade through and try to get enough rest to get back out and get on the road again. And I just don't have any time to do anything anymore.
Well, isn't it nice that you're still in demand, though?
Yes, it is. It really is.
What's the reaction that you hear from your fellow musicians, Clark?
Oh, everybody just says it's a fantastic thing. It's something we've been very much in need of around New York for a number of years. And I suppose it's like everything else. Everybody talks about doing something, but nobody ever takes the initiative to do anything about it. And finally, Jack and a few other people have actually done what many people have talked about. And musicians that I have spoken to who've been there just think it's fantastic. They like to take their friends there when they come to town, which is something I'd like to do.
And maybe that flugelhorn as you've used, maybe that can find a resting spot there. I'd love to see it.
Yeah, maybe so.
How do you feel about playing flugelhorn? That's gotten to be quite the jazz instrument now, hasn't it?
Yeah, it has. It's something that's probably a little more intimate, and the form of expression than the trumpet, because I guess because of the nature of the horn. It's a larger bore instrument, and it's a more mellow sound. It's a more subdued type sound, and the approach is completely different than trumpet.
What do you think of the young musicians extant nowadays?
Oh, I happen to be one who has an opportunity to go out and work with these young people and see them and find them and hear them when they're first blossoming and blooming. And I just think it's just fantastic, the caliber of musicianship that's on its way to the top today. And believe me, it's just beautiful.
Our thanks to Clark Terry for being our guest. Incidentally, the record we heard by Clark on flugelhorn was called Hymn. It's a Charlie Parker number, and it also co-featured trombonist Bob Brookmeyer, the piano of Roger Kellaway, Bill Crow on bass, and Dave Bailey on drums. now it's time to conclude our tour through the New York Jazz Museum. We have one final question for Managing Director Jack Bradley, and that would be, are you satisfied with the progress so far?
Oh, I'm really thrilled. It's unbelievable. To tell you the truth, when we opened, I really had strong doubts how long we could go because we had no money or no help. We still have no money, but we have more help than we did, and a couple of foundations are very interested in funding us. So far, everyone's just been working as volunteers, and next month it'll be a year. Howard Fisher and myself have been doing this, and it is quite a strain on us, but we both believe in it, and jazz is my life. I'm sure the museum can only go further up from this point on.
If you'd like more information about the New York Jazz Museum, you can write them or visit them at 125 West 55th Street, New York, New York, 10019. Our thanks to Jack Bradley, the managing director, and to Howard Fisher, the executive director, and to special guest Clark Terry for being with us tonight on a one-night stand with the big bands on WTIC Radio. The next in our monthly series of features will be on June 6th. I hope you'll join us when we salute the music of the late Glenn Miller and his orchestra with a young Connecticut lad who came from the state of Connecticut to be one of the stalwarts in the Miller Band, Lee Knowles in the trumpet section. Join us June 6th, 9:05 till 10 p.m. on a one-night stand with the big bands. Tonight's program was produced and edited by Brian Hartnett, engineering by Bob Schirago. And it's been brought to you by WTIC and by Russo Chevrolet across from Bradley International in Windsor Locks, where they'll get your car ready for the great outdoors with a free auto checkup. This is Arnold Dane. We'll see you June 6th on another one-night stand with the big bands.